WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Last month, Pope John Paul II wrote a letter to bishops upholding the ban against the ordination of women as priests. He wrote, "In order that all doubt may be removed regarding a matter of great importance, I declare that the Church has no authority whatsoever to confer priestly ordination on women, and that this judgment is to be definitively held by all the Church's faithful." My guest, Father Gus Denoia, is the theologian to the National Conference of Bishops. We asked him to explain to us why women cannot be ordained in the Roman Catholic Church. First, I asked him to summarize the Pope's letter.
The letter is rather brief, actually, and its content can be stated quite simply. It harkens back to earlier communications and simply rehearses what's contained in earlier letters about the matter, essentially since 1976. The issue is that because Christ did not choose women to be among his apostles, although he had very many close associates who were women, because he did not do so, the Church has not done so and believes itself unable to do so. Now, there is no, if I may say, what the letter does not state, which is extraordinarily interesting, actually. It does not appeal to any qualities, either of maleness or femaleness, to substantiate this. So it's not saying that women are, for some reason, do not have the proper characteristics. Men do. It doesn't claim that because Christ was a man, priests must be men. These arguments are, no reference is made to any arguments which attach ordination and its recipients to specifically male qualities, which I think is extraordinarily important for the question of gender and the Church.
One of the reasons the Pope has given, I guess the primary reason for not ordaining women, is that Jesus chose men as his apostles. As a theologian, is it your job to ask, why did Jesus choose only men as his apostles? Or is that something you'd prefer not to speculate about?
No, that's a good question. It is a good question, one that I would ask. May I use an analogy here?
Please.
The Eucharist, right? I mean, the Mass, Holy Communion. Communion is celebrated with bread and wine. Now, some people have sometimes suggested that it be celebrated with other things, other elements, so-called. And the Church has always said, well, we can't celebrate it with other elements because Christ celebrated it with bread and wine. Now, because we had no Eucharist except because Christ gave it to us, then we can't do with the Eucharist what he didn't do, even though there might be terrifically good reasons, perhaps the unavailability of wine in certain cultures. There would be good reasons for doing differently. Now, subsequently, theologians do think a lot about why bread and wine were apt choices, but again, you see, it's the analogy is similar to the situation with the ordination of women. There would be no such thing as a priesthood, the Church is saying, if Christ did not institute it. So we have only the parameters established by his action and behavior in the matter, you see, similar to the bread and wine in the Eucharist. So the Church is just saying, no matter what anybody says about this matter, and they could make terrifically intelligible cases, you know, for alternatives in these areas, the Church is saying it doesn't feel authorized to act in a way in an area which would not exist, you might say, in a matter where there would be nothing to talk about without Christ's example. It doesn't feel free to act in a way differently. Although, then it does ask the question, why did he do it this way? Excuse me. A theologian would.
Okay? So, and what answer would you come up with?
Yikes, Terry. I'm not sure. No, I mean that, I have thought about this a lot.
There's a morally complex answer.
No, I've thought about it a lot. I mean, but I think it would be, if I may put it this way, at this moment, it's a little confusing for me to give you what my reasons for it might be, because we're concentrating here on trying to be clear that the letter itself is extraordinarily sparing in its giving of reasons, you see? So, and especially reasons rooted in gender differences, which has got to be where the explanation would presumably have to emerge.
Is this like walking through a minefield for you, dealing with something that has to do with gender but doesn't really address what's inherently different about gender?
Not a minefield, not really. I mean, I think that we've learned in the because of feminist thought, everybody has thought about these matters much more intensely in the last 20 to 30 years than has ever been done in the whole history of inquiry, even philosophical inquiry. So, and there's a lot of dispute about what the status of gender differences are, what biologically, psychologically, metaphysically. So I tend at this moment to think that the state of the discussion, to be honest with you, is premature for the church to, for a theologian to adopt any really strong case for the action of Christ in this matter, I think is going to be a little bit premature. I mean, the church has affirmed and constantly over the last 20 to 30 years, the importance of women, the significance of women and their role in the church and their authority. My boss, if I may put it that way, at the National Conference of Catholic Bishops is a woman, Sister Sharon Ewart. And this is true across the United States and across the church, that women do in fact occupy positions of extraordinary importance and authority, because the church feels itself free to put them into those positions, even though it does not feel itself free to put them into the position of ordination. You see what I mean? In other words, every conceivable area at this moment in which women could exercise authority and leadership in the church has been open to them. This is the only one that has not been.
We know what a lot of women are thinking. If it's considered discrimination in our society to exclude women from anything, job or any part of society, why is it morally okay to exclude women from such an important function within the church?
Well, because, you see, this function is in its structure stipulated by an institutional act on the part of Christ, so that the church cannot do here what he didn't do. Now, you know, see, this is another important thing to recognize, is that there are many men who aren't priests. So that the role of priesthood, I mean, that I am a priest, say, from the point of view of the church, does not make me, give me a greater status in any really significant, spiritually significant way from any other man or woman. So that the argument that ordination must be open to everyone is misleading, because it suggests that ordination constitutes a higher rank, that priesthood constitutes a higher rank in the church in some deeply significant way. Now, of course, it does involve a spiritual authority, but I am equal. To put it this way, the Pope, me, and any other member of the church are all equal in the sight of God in the matters, in things that really matter, which are spiritual and personal, matters of personal and spiritual identity, even though the Pope has exercised extraordinary authority in the church. He is, you might say, we are all equal in the sight of God. So it's a religious argument, and I know that in modern societies, especially in the last 100 or 200 years or so, I mean, the whole rights and freedom, movements of rights and freedoms that we have from modernity make it very difficult to make that case. And I'm quite aware that I'm making a case which will strike some people as being a little bit dotty. but you're asking me for a theological response, and that's the only one I can give, that ordination does not make you rank higher in matters of real importance in the church from others.
What would you say the church has learned watching other religions in which women are ordained, and in branches of Judaism, women are ordained. In the Episcopal Church, women have been allowed to be ordained for, mm-hmm, I don't know, about 15 years. Many Protestant churches, women are ordained now. What do you see when you look there, and is there anything that's relevant to the Catholic Church?
That's also a very good question. But begin, however, by mentioning the Orthodox churches. That's the churches of the Greek, Russian, and all of the branches of the Orthodox Church. A friend of mine who's visiting me just over the weekend said to me that it would be unthinkable in the Orthodox Church to ordain women. So that in this, in announcing this constant teaching in this letter, the Church has, the Catholic Church has a definite eye toward the Orthodox churches with whom it is struggling mightily to have better relations. Now, these, you know, if I may bring in the wider world at the moment, you have to realize that at this moment, with the collapse of the Soviet bloc, the Orthodox churches are all sort of reorganizing, and there are tremendously important discussions going on in the Ukraine, in Russia generally, and in all of the former republics of the Soviet Union, and then in other Eastern Bloc nations where the Orthodox churches are very, very strong. There is a tremendous amount of discussion going on between the Catholic Church, the Holy See, and those churches, within which the idea of ordination of women is simply, as my friend said, unthinkable. So, you see, I mean, in the Catholic Church, holy orders is a sacrament. It's one of the seven sacraments. Well, in the other churches, except for Anglicanism, it is not a sacrament, and it does not confer any particular sacramental character or mark on the person who receives it. It's just a functional matter. It's a matter of service in the church and not conceived of as a sacramental transformation of the person who receives it, somewhat like baptism or the Eucharist. Now, with Anglicanism, the situation is different because Anglicanism professed to be much closer to the Catholic Church on this issue. But you know as well as I do that the move of the Anglicans to ordain women has not been a one that was made without tremendous conflict and disruption within the Anglican Church. So the Catholic Church would be simply saying that whatever these other churches do in this area, or feel themselves able to do in this area, it stands with the Orthodox as affirming a constant tradition of not ordaining women.
You know what some people are saying about the apostles' connection here. Jesus also chose Jews to be his apostles. Does that mean all priests need to be Jews?
Right.
I don't. You know that, no, that's maybe said half in jest, but answer that. I mean, how do you answer that?
Well, almost immediately. The church moved beyond Palestinian Judaism, and encompassed wide numbers of varieties of people. Although it is true that Christ only chose Jews to be among his apostles, it was clear that the intention. You see, that's a good judgment call. It was clear that his intention was to embrace the entire. To embrace all of the nations as members of this community, and that happened almost within months, you might say, of his death, that there began to be people from other ethnic groups. Indeed, Palestine itself was already quite cosmopolitan. There were many Greek cities, and there was no intention. I mean, I'd say the church recognized that it would be inconceivable for Christ to have intended by his having only Jewish disciples that only Jews should be disciples. You know, so that would be that's a case of a judgment call.
My guest is Father Gus DeNoia, theologian to the National Conference of Bishops. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're discussing the Pope's recent letter to bishops saying the Church cannot ordain women as priests. My guest, Father Gus DeNoia, is theologian to the National Conference of Bishops. I'm wondering where you come in a situation like this where the Pope issues a letter on why ordination should be reserved for men alone. Did you know about the letter before it's issued?
No. When
do you find out about it? And then what does your job become after the letter's released?
You mean my job at the Bishops' Conference?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, essentially, I mean, I did have a little lead time. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't have said no so quickly. I did have a little lead time, but not very much, actually. It was a very difficult thing because I found out about it. It was the middle of the Memorial Day weekend, so it was quite chaotic trying to get anything out to the press, you know, helping the press to understand it. Now, my own job becomes trying to help. Specifically, my job is to help the bishop. So what I did was I made up 15 of the hardest questions I could think of about this, some of which you have already asked, and answered them in 3 pages or so, which we then faxed to all of them. Now, when I say made up hard questions, I meant questions which people would obviously ask. And then I tried to give as intelligent case for the action as I could, because I mean, one thing that is important to understand is that Catholics believe that that the Pope and the bishops too, when they teach authoritatively, and that the Holy Spirit is present to them, so that there has to, you know, from a Catholic point of view, there has to be an interior acceptance in faith of things of importance. So it's part of our whole attitude towards the teaching authority that we would accept. So I'm not, in other words, it's not me putting a spin on this teaching, but I myself sincerely accept it and then try to give an intelligent, just as I'm doing with you, try to give as intelligent a case for it as I can.
Would you allow a part of yourself to wish that the Pope had done differently, or is it really not your place to wish those kinds of things, no matter what you feel?
You know, there is a part of me that certainly recognizes the spiritual gifts of many women that I have encountered who have had powerful influences over my life. In fact, one could say, you know, if I were going to be autobiographical, that there are probably more women who have had influence over my faith that has been significant than any men. And that goes back to the second grade teacher to whom I, in a sense, feel I owe my vocation, and to a fifth grade teacher who first told me about the Dominican Order, which I belong to now. So that you have a feeling, I suppose, that given this great spiritual authority that so many women have, you'd say to yourself, well, why couldn't they be ordained too? And in that sense, so that I do permit myself to ask the question, but I nonetheless, as a Catholic, not a Catholic loyal to the Pope, by the way, because our allegiance is not to the Pope, but as a Catholic who believes that God has so ordered the Church as to have embodied in the teaching of the Pope and the bishops his intentions for the Church, I accept this teaching, even though it strikes me as a difficult one. I mean, I recognize it as a difficult one for many people to accept. Does that make sense to you? In other words, I feel loyalty to the Pope as Pope, but what constitutes my reasons for accepting these teachings is not loyalty or allegiance to the Pope, but a conviction that in the Church, as ordered by Christ, the Pope speaks in his name.
Now, has the Pope's letter effectively ended debate on the issue of ordination of women? And say one of the bishops who you consult with disagrees with the Pope. Are they allowed to express it? What happens?
Well, if a person disagrees with a teaching, okay, suppose I'm a bishop and I think on this matter that the Pope has made a mistake, let's say. Suppose I thought that.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, what would be required of me would be 2 things. First of all, the struggle to confront as honestly as I can the Pope's teaching as a challenge to my convictions. Suppose I am convinced women should be ordained, then when the Pope teaches this, then I should be internally, my determination should be one of trying to struggle with my own views to see if I can assent internally. And then it may turn out that I still am, I have doubts. You see, I mean, I may have doubts nonetheless, but then what is required of me as a bishop would be never to express those doubts in a way that would unsettle the people over whom I have authority in the church, so that's why the bishop would keep any doubts, or a theologian would keep any doubts he had about the matter to himself, because of the role of authority that he has, or the theologian he or she has in the church.
Just another behind-the-scenes question. When you send your interpretations to the bishops, do they have to agree with your interpretation or follow it?
Oh, God, no.
No?
No, see, one thing that's important to understand about the Catholic Church is that it's not, and the Conference of Catholic Bishops, is that the bishops are members of the conference, but their authority is not subject to the conference. I mean, each bishop is answerable only to the Holy See, to the Pope. I mean, so that's, it's truly a college. So every bishop, even the cardinals, whom we tend to assume have a tremendous amount of influence, no cardinal is any more, every cardinal is equal with every bishop. So all of the bishops are equally members of the College of Bishops with the Pope. So now, and each bishop has often his own theologians, and many of them on the big dioceses, especially like, say, Chicago or New York, they're not waiting with bated breath, let me tell you, with what comes from DeNoia sitting in Washington. They will get whatever help they can from it, but, oh no, they're entirely free to talk about the matter without even referring to anything that I say about it. In fact, the bishops just had an assembly in San Diego, and one of them didn't even know about my 15 questions. He hadn't even seen them, of all the things that came across his desk. So, no, they are not bound by any means. We're just helping them in a way. We're like a staff which supplies them, tries to help them in ways that will be useful, but they make whatever use of what we send them that they want to.
Father Gus DeNoia is theologian to the National Conference of Bishops. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.